we are back here on Mornings with Box 2 Radio on the Box 2 Radio Network, and we are ready for our interview with Jim Waters from the Bluegrass Institute, and we have Brother Jason here.
Yeah.
Taking over for us. So.
Hey, Brother Jim. How's things going with the Bluegrass Institute?
Well, of course, to those that may be new to who we are, the Bluegrass Institute is a state-based free market think tank. And what that means is that our focus is on Kentucky, both at the state and local levels when it comes to policy, which is just another word for legislation or law. And then we are a free market think tank, which means that the work that we do is based on free market principles of less government, more freedom, individual liberty, and a transparent, accountable government, as well as free market capitalism. So we're very much in favor of, you know, responsible, smaller, less costly government. And when you have that, the citizens have more resources to pursue their God-given dreams and callings. And that's the way our founders intended for it. So our policy proposals are based on those principles. And, you know, one of our principles is that a government can't give anybody anything that it hasn't first taken from somebody.
Yeah.
And a government that's big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take everything you've got.
Right.
And so we want citizens to be free, entrepreneurial, figure out their own solutions, have the liberty to educate their children how and where they feel is best for them, and also for government to, you know, keep taxes low. Let's fund only what is necessary, and let's not waste taxpayer dollars. And so that's all within our work at the Bluegrass Institute. We are part of a national network of state-based groups. There are 66 of them in the United States. And then we also, there are associate members of that network, like the Heritage Foundation, which many of your listeners have heard and support, I suppose. So that's what we're about, and you can find us online at BIPS.org, BIPPS.org. We have revamped our website. We're still working out some of the kinks on that, but you can find a lot of information about the issues that are being debated at the state and local levels, which, you know, really do, Brother Jason, affect people in Kentucky even more than most of what Washington does.
Right.
It just doesn't get as much attention sometimes. So so we need to be aware that what happens in Frankfort and what happens at City Hall and what happens at county government matters to you as a citizen.
Right.
And, we need Christians who are better informed on this.
Yeah. And BIPS is a great resource. I use it often and love checking out your blogs and articles there.
Well, and I appreciate, you know, what you're doing here, because, you know, I think it's really important that that Christians in Kentucky, conservative Christians, you know, really understand these issues and have the information available to talk to their representative or to talk to others about this. And, you know, I'm all for pro-life and all the social issues, but I think we also need to be better informed on what's happening with our tax dollars, because, you know, that's money that we as families could be putting in into the work of the kingdom, the gospel, of our education, and whatever. So I think that really does matter, and I believe it's a relevant discussion.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I know that the, you know, the General Assembly session is over, but your work continues.
Right.
So what do you got going on right now? Is there anything in particular that's kind of on your mind or you've been writing about or anything like that?
Well, I don't think we've been on the air since the General Assembly session was over.
Sure.
And so I thought we might just take a moment and I want to, and it also goes to your question. What the General Assembly did also goes to your question about what we're working on,
right.
And that usually works that way. You know, we're not just about getting a law passed. We're about the policy, how a law is implemented, and really holding our government officials accountable for their work on behalf of taxpayers and citizens. But there were a couple of major things that happened this session that we've talked about before in the past, but I want to revisit them because it has to do with the work we're doing now. There were two constitutional amendments passed during this session.
Okay.
One of those would prohibit non-citizens from voting. Now, you would think that this would already be the case, we have had, as you know, a lot of rancor and a lot of mm-hmm. Questions about our voting process and making sure that it's done right and fairly and legally. And so this amendment would basically close the door on any loopholes that might exist that might allow a resident of Kentucky who is not a citizen of this country to vote. And so that's one of the amendments. The other one, of course, is one we talked a lot about, and that would remove the legal obstacles to the legislature passing school choice policies that include some kind of funding mechanism like a scholarship tax credit or like an education opportunity accounts like the legislature has passed in the past. So because of the liberals and the progressives have, the anti-school choice people, even some rural Republican legislators, which is just outrageous, but they've also opposed this, and I understand the reasoning, but it's just maybe outrageous is too strong. Maybe that doesn't. I do understand why some mm-hmm. rural Republicans are concerned, but you know we can't be against things just because it will change something.
Right.
If change is needed, then we should embrace that. We should be for the right kind of change. And the fact is that only 1 in 3 of our Kentucky K-12 students can read proficiently at grade level and do math proficiently at grade level. That percentage reduces quite a bit for minorities and low-income students. It's down into the teens. Only 14% of our black students can read proficiently in Kentucky. So this is not about change for change's sake. This is about giving parents of children the option that will give their children the best education possible.
Yeah.
And it's just beyond me how some who call themselves conservative and Republicans mm-hmm. are some of the biggest obstacles on this. So I hope we'll see that change.
Well, you know, I think some of those rural Republicans, they hold on to that because, you know, in some of these counties, the school system is one of the largest employers. And I think that they're afraid of that change. But those jobs are not going to go away. They may change the way they look a little bit, or they may not fall under the NEA any longer, but they're still going to be there.
Well, that's right. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the myths that the teachers' unions and the opponents try to, I think, influence those rural legislators in particular with. But the fact is, that another thing that's happened during this session, which is the primary constitutional responsibility of legislators, and that is to pass a two-year budget. And the charges have been made that if we have school choice, that this will harm the public education system, that it will take resources away from the public education system. But the fact is that during this budget, in the most recent budget, the legislators increased the seat per pupil funding base mm-hmm. by 3% in the first year of the budget and by another 4% in the second year of the budget. So, and there's there's other increases in educational funding. So, in fact, in the last few budgets, we've had record increases in the amount of funding provided to local school districts. And
right.
you're going to hear this throughout this year that the legislature did not give teachers raises. But that's really not right, because the legislature gave local districts increased funding to use as they see fit. So
right.
if one of the needs at the local district is to increase salaries for teachers, they can do that. They'll have the funding to do that. But, you know, not all districts are the same. We have 171 school districts in Kentucky, so
right.
there are different needs in different districts. And I think it's important to understand that the legislature recognized this and did increase funding for education, but left it up to the local districts about how those dollars get spent. And, you know, teachers do not work for the state. This is a misnomer that the governor has tried to get people to believe so that he can use it for political gain, but teachers do not work for the state. Teachers
sure.
work for the local school districts. They're hired by the districts, and each of the local school districts have their own salary schedule and their own pay scale according to what they pay teachers, which you can find on the school district's website. So, you know, like Grayson County or Breckinridge County, Hardin County, they mm-hmm. all have their own pay salary schedules, and they make those decisions at the local level. So, you know, and that allows a lot more flexibility in hiring teachers that are needed for certain areas, or providing other needs that might be greater needs, you know, transportation needs or
sure.
curriculum opportunities or a host of other possibilities. So there was a lot of increased funding in education. The legislature passed a $30 billion state budget, and then they passed, in addition to that, $2.7 billion in one-time funding projects. So House Bill 1 was about those one-time projects, $2.7 billion. Now, the Senate wanted more than that. The Senate wanted about $3.5 billion, but the House would not agree to that. So as a result, they compromised, and there was kind of a middle ground found in what they're going to spend. But, you know, I'm not opposed to these one-time dollars that get spent on one-time projects.
Right.
Many of them were for infrastructure needs, for water and sewer needs in communities, for other infrastructure requirements that have been put off. And these are one-time projects. They're not creating new government programs. They're meeting the needs of communities and helping with that. So I think that that's a much better use of those dollars than what the governor wanted to do, which was basically spend every dollar to create new government programs that would have to be funded in the
right.
future.
Yeah, because they don't go away once they're started. Once those,
that's right. Yeah. How many taxes have you ever known that went away
yeah, exactly.
after, you know, 1 year? Or how many government programs went away, you know?
Right.
After 1 year. So,
yeah, I do think that's a great way to do it.
Well, it's you know, there's still some spending decisions that probably, you know, probably maybe weren't the best. But
sure.
overall, I'm talking overall now, I think that this is, as Senate President Robert Stiver said, the best budget that this legislature has passed maybe ever, and certainly since, you know, since in a long time since we've been working on this in the past 20 years, by far, this has been the best process and the best budget.
Right.
And I want to get back to this point about they increased funding on education by a significant amount. So when you hear this nonsense about, you know, that the legislature did not properly fund education, you'll never hear any details about that because... if you look at the details of that, they increased, for example, the general fund by almost by $9.7 million in the first year, by $19 million in the second year, to the teacher's retirement system. So that's another almost $30 million. They've been putting even $100 million into the teacher's pension plan in
wow.
recent budgets. So
yeah.
this is all... that's all going to be propaganda. But the facts are that education funding has increased really more under the Republican-led mm-hmm. legislature than it did even when the Democrats were in charge. They're the ones that allowed the teacher pension system to really go in the hole.
Right, yeah, that's true.
So, if you want to talk about just, funding alone, there's a lot to be, I think, to praise here. Now, the governor, when he got the budget, there were 23 line items that he vetoed. The Constitution in Kentucky allows the governor to line item vetoes in the budget, and he did 23 of them. The legislature overrode 22 of them. 22 of the 23, as we have a siren in the background, which you can probably hear. But
yeah.
That's what happens when you're sitting in an old building, brother.
That's all right.
But it
creates atmosphere.
Overrode several vetoes, overrode most of the governor's vetoes. I think that was the only one they failed to override during this session. So they've overridden about almost, I think, around 150 vetoes from the governor have been overridden by the legislature since Governor Beshear took office.
Wow.
Which the citizens should understand is the way our Constitution works, because it allows the legislature to provide a check and balance
sure.
on the executive branch. And, we saw this governor really use overextend his executive power during the COVID crisis, and he used executive privilege, way too much executive power, executive orders, and they were way too stifling. But this legislature has pushed back against his power, and I think it's best for the citizens. I think that's how it's supposed to work.
So, yeah, I agree. And it does seem, from an outside person looking in, it does seem that our General Assembly works well together, the Senate and the House. I guess because they do have that supermajority, that probably does help. But, there's always going to be that healthy compromise back and forth. But it seems to me that they work well together.
Yeah, I think, you're always going to have, when you have 138 politicians, in one building, plus the governor and all his staff, I mean, you're going to have disagreements, and you're not going to see everything the same way.
Sure.
And we saw some cases that the House and Senate, they really had to work to get to a place of agreement, which is really good for the citizens,
yeah.
and for the taxpayers. That means that all the issues get more fully debated, and I think that's healthy. I think too that gridlock sometimes can be healthy. For years the House was controlled by Democrats, the Senate by Republicans, and they weren't able to pass a whole lot of things, which sometimes is also good for taxpayers,
Yeah, exactly.
And they had to fight it out, and the things they did pass, there was wide agreement on it. So there's a lot of work that gets done, to get a bill passed and to get a budget done. And I think Representative Jason Petrie, who's the chairman of the House Budget Committee, has just done an excellent job. I cannot say enough about the work he's done since he became the budget chairman. And he's from Western Kentucky. He's
okay.
not from the Golden Triangle. He's not from Louisville or
sure.
Lexington. He
yeah.
comes from Western Kentucky. Senator Chris McDaniel, the Senate Budget Chairman, comes from Northern Kentucky. And, Senator Daniels brings a business background with him, which I think has been good and healthy for our budget process. And then Representative Petrie brings kind of that smaller town, Western Kentucky approach, and as a small town attorney, he's going to have a very practical and common sense view of things, and I think it has served us well. And I think they've done a great job. We're going to be in line here the way that they set this up. We're going to be in line for another reduction in our individual income tax rate. In 2025, actually, would be when that would happen. But the the numbers will have to come in, the revenue numbers, and we'll know this fall about whether we'll see another 0.5% reduction in the state individual income tax next year, which will spur economic growth in our state. It will spur new businesses. It will spur population growth. It will bring a whole host of positive results. And so that was another reason why they approached the spending from two different perspectives. There was the House Budget 6, which was the general budget, House Bill 6, which was the general fund budget, and the normal budget. The House Bill 1 was the one-time projects, and they separated those because the individual income tax rate is triggered by the what happens with House Bill 6 and the general fund budget. So I think that was a really smart and creative move. It was very strategic, and I think it was very good.
Right.
And then there was a major crime bill that was passed during the session. Very controversial. It had 14 different parts to it.
Before you go to that, can I ask one quick question? You were talking about the two constitutional amendments. What happens from this point going forward before we get to that crime bill?
Sure, yeah. What happens is those are going to be on the ballot in November.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
All voters will be able to vote on that. We're not sure which order, which one will be one and two yet.
Okay.
I'm still working to confirm that. But both will be on there. Both will be, I think, fairly simple language. I think legislators have learned from the past that you can't have complicated language,
sure,
hope to get it passed. So
yeah.
I think we're going to see, I know on the school choice bill, it's going to be a couple of sentences, and that's it.
Okay.
And basically, do you favor allowing the General Assembly to create school choice programs with funding? And by the way, when people vote for that, it's not going to be about voting for a particular kind of school choice. It's simply going to be a vote to allow the legislature to do that,
right,
without being hindered. So,
okay.
So it'll be on the ballot, and there will be throughout this year, there will be really two sides: those who are for it and those who are against it. It will be just like a political campaign.
Sure.
You'll see ads about it. You'll see discussion and debate about it, and then in November, the voters will decide. The governor cannot do anything about it. He didn't even sign these bills. The Constitution really says that if the legislature decides to put them on the ballot, they're on the ballot.
Right.
No matter what the governor thinks.
Right.
But he's opposed to our bills.
So we still have work to do with those come November.
Yeah.
To vote.
Well, before November. Yes.
Yeah.
We need to make sure everybody understands,
right,
what they're about. And that's what we're working on, is really educating people about what, particularly the school choice amendment, what it is and what it is not.
Yeah.
And, it is not a particular type of school choice. It's simply allowing the legislature to make that decision and put that in the Constitution, which will mean that we will have school choice in Kentucky.
Right.
What kind and how it works and all that still remains to be decided by law.
Well, that's good. All right. Yeah. Well, we'll keep everybody informed on that as the months go by, as we head toward November. But we have about 3 minutes. Do you have time to discuss the crime bill you were talking about?
Yeah, just wanted to mention that.
Okay.
That it passed. It cracks down on violent crime. It increases penalties. I think there are many positives about it. I think there's some question marks about what it's going to cost, and in terms of incarceration rates, we already have high incarceration rates in Kentucky. So, I think we're going to see some revisiting of these. I think this was a political move as well by Republicans to show that they're paying attention to the crime issues, and particularly in our urban areas.
Right.
And also, there was some controversy in there about homelessness. How this would treat the homeless, and it does create criminal penalties, mild ones, but criminal penalties for homelessness. So it's going to be in the executing of that bill that we'll see how all that works out.
Sure.
But those are some of the major things that happened during this year's session that will also be revisited in the future.
Right. So. All right. Well, Brother Jim, we do appreciate all you do for us. Keep us informed. Tell our listeners one more time how they can get in touch with you and your website before we say goodbye.
Yeah, and if I can quickly, sure. You made a great point about local school districts and rural lawmakers being concerned, and I understand that. So
sure.
I want to make sure we do understand what their concerns
Absolutely,
are.
Absolutely,
yeah. But we should be open to doing what's best for students and not the system.
Right.
But you can reach us at bips.org, BIPPS.org, and you can find all of my contact information there. It's jwaters@freedomkentucky.com. And we'd love to hear from listeners, and any questions you might have that we can answer, please reach out. I'm happy to help with that.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Brother Jim, and always look forward to hearing from you and you keeping us informed of all that's going on. Have a great
thank
week.
Thank you all for the work you're doing.
Sure.
God bless.
You too.